Eastern New York City.
Join us each week as we journey into the unknown. Let's cross the threshold of reality together.
We take a fun and no-nonsense approach to our show, and we love to interact with our audience. Each week, you can expect a great guest, interesting topics, and strong opinions by myself and Stephanie.
As well as rapid readings, psychic dream interpretations, and the gemstone of the week. And don't ask us a question that you don't want an answer to.
Give us 2 hours of your time to inform, enlighten, and entertain you. Let the journey begin.
Join us.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of The Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and today is March 13th, 2012. For tonight's program, just like all programs, I would love to have the audience input with questions and comments. So if you join the virtual auditorium in Pal Talk, you can send them to me via text. And if you're listening through one of the other venues, you can email them to me at giascott@exogenynetwork.com. Our guests also have pages on our website. Just click on their names in the left-hand column, and you will go straight there. Our listeners can also find our guest list there, so you know who was on which show. Lots of great information on other topics can be found there, as well as links to blogs, Facebook, Twitter, and even Google+. And for all of our fans that are also foodies, we've got a fun project coming up as we put together a cookbook. So be sure to go to the website and find out how to submit a recipe yourself. We're going to be holding a drawing during our anniversary show this month, and it's just a couple of weeks away now, so get those recipes in. Each submission is worth one entry. We haven't decided what exactly we're going to be offering as a prize yet, but I'll guarantee you one thing, it's not going to be anything big enough that you have to worry about paying taxes on it, but it should be something that everyone who cooks or eats will love. Now tonight, I am joined by both a guest and a guest co-host. So first, I am going to welcome my co-host, Vaishali. Vaishali, would you be so kind as to introduce yourself to the audience?
Well, I'm always thrilled to be able to spend time with you again, Gio. We always have endless things to talk about. But when I'm not hanging out with the lovely and talented Gia Scott, then I am an author of going on 4 books. I'm highly pregnant with my 4th book, although you'd never know it to look at me. My first book was You Are What You Love, and the companion playbook to You Are What You Love. Then there was Wisdom Rising, and the soon-to-be-released Wisdom Rising 2. I have a website. I call it the most beautiful purple website in all of internet land, and it's at purplev.com, V as in violet. It's a flash animation-driven site, so it's a little different than probably most sites you've been to. Wait till you see Enter Site Flash in the center of the screen after going to purplev.com, and then click on Enter Site and have a enjoyable time exploring the most beautiful purple website in all of internet land. I'm also a syndicated radio show host, and all my radio shows are available for free download on the audio archive section. Myself as a life management expert, which simply means that I've managed to pull myself out of so many fires. I have a very good idea of how most people shoot themselves in the foot and the best way to come out the other side of that with some sense of grace and dignity. I also write monthly contributions to the Huffington Post in the lifestyle section, as well as other periodicals. I write about spirituality. One of my favorite topics in spirituality is my favorite 18th century Swedish mystic, a man I call my boyfriend, Emanuel Swedenborg, a man voted by Stanford University to be the most brilliant man who ever lived. And I'm not one to argue with Stanford University, especially when they vote somebody that I agree with them as being the most brilliant man to have ever lived. And I also write about alternative health. I am certified in a very rare esoteric form of internal organ massage from China that I used to resurrect my organs when I was diagnosed as terminal in my 20s. I went on to study Indian Ayurvedic medicine, Tibetan Ayurvedic medicine, and to get certified in this esoteric Taoism, you have to have, I forget, something like between 180 and 200 hours in Chinese medicine as well. So I have that whole Eastern vista of self-healing, and what I love about it is that they don't take the notion that you are a spiritual creature having a human experience out of the equation, and they come in and treat and consider and offer routine based on the notion that you're a spiritual creature exploring what the human classroom has to offer you. And, oh yeah, I like to wear purple. That about sums it up.
That's pretty cool. And Robert Scott Bell is our guest tonight. And without further ado, Robert, would you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. It's good. It's good. Great to be here, by the way. And Waishali, lots of love. I've been on your show. You've been on my show. It's our first time together on Gia's show. So how cool is that?
Yeah.
Anyway, Robert Scott Bell, who am I? Well, some people call me the voice of health freedom. I've been in the broadcast media since 1999. But that was only after hard-won learning to become a homeopath for over 10 years, having been raised pharmaceutically by doctors in and out of hospitals and medical offices for the first 24 years of my life. Actually, the first 19, then I gave up on modern medicine, and only to find 4 or 5 years later, homeopathic medicine, organic food, detoxification, and the like, and got well over the span. Well, it took about 2 years out of 24 to undo much or almost most of the damage, and then every year since, found myself getting younger and stronger and healthier by living differently. And the thing I guess I found I couldn't do was shut up. So I had to go into the broadcast media and teach my fellow Americans all the things we were not taught growing up about natural health, living, healing, and many other things on economic and political levels that would apply principles that I applied in the human spirit and other areas into the other aspects of life and, you know, basically integrate them back together. And that's what became ultimately the Robert Scott Bell Show, went into national syndication for many years, and my show for Sundays, and then expanded Groundhog Day in 2010 with Mike Adams and Natural News with the Natural News Radio Network at naturalnewsradio.com. But all of the archives are available for free download through there, and you can link through my site at robertscottbell.com. Get plugged into things that you'll never hear in the old media. In empowering and often irreverent ways, and we try to throw in a bit of humor along the way as well, because if we can't laugh about all of this, we're going to cry. So we have a good time.
Well, I've always called humor the grease for life's speed bumps.
Yeah, exactly right.
Kind of gets you over them.
Yeah, we like that form of lubrication.
Yeah. At least it's fun, right?
Exactly.
I have to admit, everyone, that I had kind of an ulterior motive behind tonight's program. I've been suffering from a number of health issues over the past year and have become somewhat disenchanted with modern medicine's ability to make me well, you might say, because it seemed like each time they add a meal to the regimen, I come up with a new ailment and additional side effects that then again need treated again. So I'm feeling like I've climbed onto a rat wheel that's going nowhere that I want to go, and have again looking at other ways to deal with some issues. So who better to bring in the program than Waishali and Robert Scott Bell, right? That's a good place to start. I'm sure that I'm not among the minority. Americans are older than ever than before. More people are
from the baby boomer generation than any other era, and we're now becoming a tail end factor of appeal to that segment of the population. But we're older. That means we are more likely to suffer from the cumulative effects of our lives and our pharmaceutical ways, I think. And questions like our sources, why are we getting sicker? Why are we sicker than people have ever been before?
Well, there's the disconnect, and I know you're speaking my story. Although a younger man I was, as a baby, in fact, I was the canary in the coal mine, so I had to be raised pharmaceutically and medically to understand what not to do, and then have that embedded deeply into my very DNA to be able to communicate that out to many people who had abandoned self-healing or health sovereignty and turned their bodies over to the pharmaceutical industrial complex and the government who sanctions them and grants them special monopoly status. And all of the medicines that I was utilizing ended up resulting in what you just described, Gio, 10 other symptoms along the way of suppressing the first one, nothing getting at the underlying cornerstone of what started the problem, or, you know, disconnect. We could say spiritually a disconnect from spirit, not that we can really do it except we can choose to ignore it. But physically, if we consume foods that are devoid of vitamins, minerals, and trace minerals and are loaded with pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, additives, preservatives, flavorings, colorings, and now genetically modified organisms, we really cut off our source of energy, you know, from the source of all sources by corrupting the temple that we are given in this lifetime to inhabit and hopefully enjoy. So it's a learning process, but in the West we've kind of been taken far afield from the origins even of our own ancestors that understood that working the land, eating the food as it was grown, was a key part of how to maintain and sustain healthy life and achieve our life's mission. And it's been convoluted, you know, ever more, but I think the wake-up call is happening, as evidenced by you get to that point, Gia, where you're sick and tired of being sick and tired and realize the doctors are like, I guess, troll you rather than to heal you.
Right, and I feel somewhat fortunate in that I feel like my current general practitioner is not the typical pill pusher. Okay, he doesn't, you know, indulge in what I call over-prescribing. But there comes a point where he has to use the tools that are available to him to treat serious health issues. In my case, one of them is hypertension, very common complaint. You know, and so then I take pills for that. Now, those happen to be the least of the ill effects because they really don't, the pills treating my high blood pressure are really not causing a problem. But I also have something referred to as trigeminal neuralgia. And for people who don't know what that is you have a misfiring nerve in your face. My first severe bout lasted an unusual couple of hours that had me, like, out of my mind with pain. And the best way for me to describe what it was like to endure that was it felt like someone had taken a railroad spike, heated it up red hot, pounded it through my cheekbone, and then taken a rusty spoon and were simultaneously trying to scoop out my eye. It was excruciating. And, you know, I would have done anything at that point, just stop the pain, you know, amputate my head, I don't care. Because you're literally, at that point, I was out of my, you can't take that kind of pain that terribly, that long. And, you know, now I take a, anti-seizure medication, which does control most of the symptoms, which is these bouts from whatever trigger. In my case, these triggers can vary across the population. Usually some sort of touch to the skin will trigger these episodes, which normally last 1 to 3 minutes, which is much better than a couple of hours. But they're still excruciating. In my case, the trigger happens to be a light breeze. It doesn't have anything to do with temperature. It's just a light breeze. Wind doesn't do it. It's just a gentle breeze. It can be a fan. It can be a breeze outdoors. It can be hot or cold. It doesn't make any difference. So on occasion, I go through life with a scarf wrapped around, completely covering every part of my face except my eyes. And people look at me a little oddly here in southern Mississippi on a hot day when I'm wearing a scarf like that, but I don't care, as long as it stops the triggers.
Yeah, you better be careful.
But the medication has side effects.
Gia, pardon? In our culture today, we get so paranoid, someone wearing a scarf can be mistaken as a Amish farmer who's providing raw milk to the community, so be careful out there.
And I do understand that. And, you know, I'll admit I'm somewhat of a recluse. I don't spend a great deal of time in public, especially on a day when I am going to have to wear a scarf like that. Because believe me, if you've got your head wrapped in a scarf, it's 96 degrees with 95% humidity. This isn't exactly comfortable. This is a very warm way to go through the day. So, you know, I'll admit, I tend, if I don't have to go anywhere, I'm not going to. But, yeah, you know, you are. I have to take it off before I go in the bank.
Sure.
Because if you're going in the bank, you're dressed like that, you're a robber.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
My experience has shown in most of these cases, and I'm not saying 100% of them, but in a vast majority of them, we have triggers that are actually gastrointestinal and or metal burdens, like mercury or cadmium. And in fact, many cases of blood pressure issues are cadmium toxicity and, of course, the resulting selenium deficiency. Now, if you go to a doctor who, yes, of course, they're well qualified to suppress your symptoms, and granted, if you're in pain, that is an appropriate thing in the extreme pain that you described. Nothing but compassion, having had a low back pain that I can understand how severe it is to the point of if it continues, you don't want to be here anymore. But I guess if you're a doctor, it's like if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So even someone who is not drug happy, still their whole designated purpose for being in their license is to be able to prescribe drugs. So by definition, they're going to work that way with rare exception.
Right.
And I would look to the general health of the gastrointestinal system as a primary place for a lot of these neurological events. Even though you say it's triggered by a light breeze, we see the external environment is carried out internally via the tube that runs from the mouth, if I may be so graphic, to the anus. And that is called the alimentary canal to your body. And so the environment is corrupted somewhere along there, and of course it plays itself out in the what we perceive to be the external world with these triggers. So if there is mercury or cadmium or both toxicity, that's something we would immediately begin to want to work out.
Well, you know, that sounds entirely reasonable to me, because part of the issues that I've been addressing all winter have been gastrointestinal issues as a result of antibiotics.
Sure.
Which I was taking because I had a tooth abscess and then escaped the bone. Now, unfortunately, I'm one of those individuals who has destroyed their teeth between being what's referred to as a mouth breather, which means my teeth dry out a lot during the course of the day. I grind my teeth when I'm asleep because apparently I also internalize a lot of stress. And that's how I express it, is in my sleep I grind my teeth to shreds. And, you know, they put me on, I think it was about 6 weeks of antibiotic therapy total. By the time that was over with, I literally felt as though I had been poisoned. That's how very sick. I feel like I have been poisoned, pain so sick. And, you know, then that has been continued because it's taking probiotics, I'm taking this organic immune system, which is supposed to help you, general sort of supplement, and change my diet immensely. And slowly but surely, I am getting better. Well, no, not yet. But there has been some improvement. And part of it is, too, I live in an area that happens to be severely deprived of what I would refer to as a good health food store, as in terms of a fresh meal by organically produced food. When Walmart is your best source of organic food, you are in a very desperate situation, you might say.
Are you
just not known,
Gia,
for organic supplies?
Right, Gia. Do you have any of the so-called dental amalgams, the mercury silver fillings?
I think I've swallowed most of them over the last 2 years.
Literally.
Literally. Yeah, as you grind your teeth to bits, any filling that you had that was made of metal
right. Is
going to end up in your mouth. And in your sleep, it's going to be swallowed.
Well, there you got the over 50% mercury, and that alone
yeah.
can set up the trigeminal, you know, nerve pain and triggers. Mercury is the second most toxic metal that we know of, and even in trace amounts, which are much larger than trace scribe, you have a burden in the body that has to be addressed. And neurological, let's say abnormalities are chief among the many symptoms that mercury in the body can bring about. And as I said, your doctor may be adept at moderating your pain or symptoms, but unfortunately, they don't look at your body in terms of toxicology and detoxification by any means. Now, there are physicians that do aggressive, what we call chelation therapies, intravenous, even cutaneous or dermal, transdermal. But I utilize homeopathic medicines. I increase selenium levels as well. And when we talk about repairing the gut, it's not just throwing a probiotic in there, because think about what an antibiotic is. It's like napalm in Vietnam. They basically defoliate the entire
thing.
And so you're left with a desert, and you throw these good guys, these critters, back in. They've got nowhere to live. And so we want integrity to the lining itself. We have to restore epithelial tissue. And so
I have to admit, when I first started taking the probiotic, I wasn't so sure about the wisdom of this route. It made me just as sick initially as the antibiotics had months before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, my first course in my addressing my overall issues was to begin consuming much more water. I now make sure that I drink 9 20-ounce containers of water a day.
Well, I assume at least you're getting purified in some way as well.
Pardon?
You're purifying the water in some way, yes?
Well, I'm actually buying purified water. The water where I live, it has an unpleasant smell, and it comes from a well, and there's a number of chemical companies in the area.
Sure.
And I'm really suspicious of it, so I don't drink it. So I buy purified water. As far as anything, I can do it myself, and I don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's good that you're increasing your hydration. I mean, if you've ever read Your Body's Many Cries for Water by Dr. Batman Gelage, even the simple act of rehydrating from chronic dehydration is going to transform you and make things possible that weren't possible at all before. So this is something I would encourage you. Indeed, we do have to remineralize your body because it's been so depleted by the lack of the selenium and other minerals in the food, as you described, not optimal. But on top of that, the depletion that happens because of the metal burden, the metal toxicology, and again, mercury as well as cadmium can result in the elevated blood pressure or the hypertension, for which, of course, they're moderating with a drug, but the reason it's there is not being addressed, again, the metal burden.
You know, Gia, this could have started out when you got vaccination as a child, because
yes,
all of those are polluted with heavy metals. And the nature of these heavy metals is that they don't run through your GI tract the way that food does. They have a tendency to get stuck in there, and they can be very challenging to flush out of the body. It's going to be something that has to be extracted. It's not like, well, if I just drink enough water over a period of time, if I eat enough food, it'll just kind of move it out. It'll have to be extracted.
Well, and that makes me even question it more, because I know in my particular case as a child, like, for example, the measles vaccination, it seemed like about every 2 years there was a letter saying that I had gotten that vaccine and I had to be revaccinated. Then, as an adult, I think I was about 30 years old, I was exposed to measles, and as well as my infant son and young daughter. And my son had never been vaccinated for measles at all. And there was a big to-do about the whole exposure because it was an unreported case of measles and so forth and so on. Anyhow, to make a long story, was recommended to get a booster. I was a correctional officer at the time, and I worked with thousands of inmates in a day. So got the booster. Well, lo and behold, the only one who got sick was me. I got the measles, and I exposed thousands of people to the measles over a period of time when I didn't realize I was sick yet. And I was sick a long time. Even after I was no longer contagious and back at work, I was not well. For anybody who's ever had measles as an adult, it's just something that even if you're reasonably healthy, really kicks your butt. If you're not healthy, I can only imagine what it would be like to go through measles. But, you know, it made me, at that point, I really questioned how worthwhile were vaccines. I had been vaccinated every 2 years from like age 2 to age 16. I was revaccinated again with a booster, which they said was going to protect me, and obviously it didn't. None of the vaccines protected me. I still got the measles. They said I had a mild case. I would have hated to have had a severe one. So, you know, I do. I question those vaccines. My granddaughter has not been vaccinated, and I don't encourage it.
Gia, this vaccination program is tantamount to what I call medical assault with a potentially deadly weapon, because children do die from these things, and more so than ever with the Gardasil shot, which is another thing we could talk about. I, in fact, did just recorded recently a 10-plus hour audio seminar with my dear friend John Rappaport on the issue of vaccines. We call it Armed and Dangerous, all the things they don't want you to hear. And people can download that through robertscottbell.com. You can check it out and link through. There's a banner there. But this is something that has to come out, because your health, or lack thereof, it was primarily, as Washali had said, starting the downturn with childhood and the assault of the injection here of medicaments and metals and foreign RNA and DNA from animal sources and antibiotics that are in there and many different substances that you would not inject into your worst enemy. And this is the kind of thing they do in the name of public health, but you're suffering from it. So there's a lot of things that can be done and have to be done, but in your area, as you said, if you're far afield from this kind of support and help, they've made it untenable for someone to help themselves in this case. So every little step you take, even just the simple act of increasing selenium levels in your body, will already go a long way. But there's a lot going on here that might take might necessitate the assistance of somebody holistically inclined to support you.
Robert, what would you suggest would be the best way for her to do that?
Yeah, because I'm sort of in a situation that I'm sure other people listening are. I need to educate myself. There isn't anybody in this area that I can go see in terms of essentially doing it for me. So I'm going to have to take on the responsibility of becoming a responsible keeper of my own health.
Mm-hmm.
So I need resources.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, if you had the time, I'd say download the hundreds of hours of shows that I have for free, and you'll learn. Of course, it'll take some time to get through it all. There are so many things that can be done in a simple basis. And, you know, you said you don't have access to food. I would say the first thing is if it's possible to grow your own even, but you know, it's cleaning up what comes into our body. Every little step we take to, let's say, reduce the burden, reduce the toxicological, is going to be paid back a thousandfold. I mean, I know you can't go 100% organic, but every percentage point better you go will relieve some of that stress so that your body can go back into a state of healing and go back into that growth mode. Right now, it's in this constant state of what's known as protection or fight or flight. It's desperately trying to defend itself against all of the things that are in there, including the mercury. So, you know, unloading that by giving the body what it needs and reducing that which it doesn't, it's a basic starting point. If you can understand that concept, then you can start making better choices every day about what you do.
Right. And even in terms of GMOs, okay, I'll admit I'm really not crazy about it. Recently there was an article or announcement released about GMOs. Already the problems are beginning to emerge. One, I think it was corn, that had a gene injected to fight off a particular type of parasite, insect parasite. Turns out that it was being mass planted, even as it had this problem. As a result, the insect has developed a way to get around this genetic modification. End result is, it's worse than ever. So, you know, we're beginning already to see the problems. More and more countries are banning them. I'm incredibly suspicious because even though they keep saying it's safe, they refuse to allow the products that are GMO-free to be labeled as such, or to label their products as containing genetically modified organisms. So you're kind of going, well, if it's so great, why don't you want us to know it's there?
You got to remember, too.
Store,
I'm sorry, Gia, you got to remember, too, when they tell you that this is safe, this is the same company, Monsanto, this is the same company that brought you Agent Orange and PCBs, and they told you when those came out, they were safe. They have a history of putting some of the most toxic substances on the planet and then lying to you about it.
And how long did they deny that Agent Orange was even a problem for the veterans coming back?
Right.
I'm not sure that officially it still is admitted that there's a problem with Agent Orange itself. So, you know, we've got this thing going on. More and more countries are banning them. More and more reports of disasters have come out, you know, in regards to the GMOs themselves. So, you know, you're trying to avoid these products. Well, I know that soybean, corn, canola, also known as rapeseed, these are some of the worst contaminated products. Most of them are going to be genetically modified. That, you know, are you looking at vegetable oil or a choice of lard then? I'm really not crazy about using lard. It really doesn't work that well and for a lot of things. And so then you have, you know, olive oil, which works for some things. You're put in a position of making some tough choices as to what you use. I decided that most important for me personally to avoid was canola. I don't want anything with, so, you know, then I have to choose between soybean and corn oil being mixed into with products. I decided in my case that soybean was probably the least of all ills. That's a personal choice. Does it have a whole lot of logic? Probably not.
Gia, if you're using soybean oil, almost 100% of it is genetically modified as well.
Yes.
I would urge you to look into coconut oil.
Okay. I will explore that option because you really don't have that many choices when you go into the grocery store. And like a lot of other people, I'm not somewhat financially challenged. I have a very finite amount that I'm going to spend on groceries for this week or next week or whatever. And so I have to make my choices within that economic parameter. And, you know, you can't always have everything you want. If we wanted to eat lobster every day, that isn't going to happen either. The same thing for steak. But, you know, within those choices, you want to make the best health-wise choices, too. Which means you're not going to be dining on Oreos and milk, you know, or whatever. Even if you really like Oreos and milk, you're still not going to have that for dinner every day.
Well, yes. I mean, you need to make simple choices in this case. You know, the economic situation we find ourselves in, we can say thank you to the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 because that set the stage for the debasement of money so that every year the money would be worth less, and who would be hammered? The middle class and the poor, while the uber-wealthy get more wealthy. And that is a function of, unfortunately, we've been duped into not believing that we should know or do know anything about economics in the same way we were told you don't need to know anything. Medicine will take care of you. But look at how well that has gone. So my point is, in every step that you take to regain or empower yourself back to health through better dietary choices, etc., we must also make those choices in an economic and political way and in every aspect of our life. And so even though it's overwhelming and daunting, every one little step is a step closer, and we can't knock ourselves for not being able to do it all at once. And yet there is something called a poverty consciousness, and I don't mean it just in a monetary sense, in that we get caught into a trap of believing that we're not worthy of getting everything we need for that healing to occur. And that is something that I don't believe the Creator sets the stage for that, if I can call it that. But that we do, that we limit that. And there may be a reality, a monetary limitation reality, but at the same time, if you believe in spirit and something well beyond, let's say, the physical and even the mental bodies, then you know that it's always trying to give us everything we need and more, and we're the limiting factor there. And just maybe we don't have the reason or answer how or why it would happen, but to just believe, at least be open to the gifts should they come in ways that we would not be expecting them. Think that seemingly would be impossible based on your present circumstances.
Right. And, you know, like you talked about earlier on the you know, that's something that most of us can do, at least on a limited basis. You can serve some salad greens in containers. You don't need a lot of space to do that. You can put some pots on a patio or a balcony, a sunny window even, and you can do those things. Salad greens are, in the grocery store to buy organic is probably one of your more cost-intensive foods, and yet it's one of the more pleasurable. So why not try growing it? It grows very quickly and easily. The same thing goes true for many of the herbs that we all enjoy in our food. They're very easy to grow. And I happen to have a fairly green thumb, so this is something that I can do to essentially stretch my dollar, get a lot of bang for my buck, and really not invest that much time or effort into the project. It's not that hard. Remembering to water it or protect it from our many, many inches of rain a year is about the only thing that we really need to do.
And Gia, there are a lot of people that are going to need to learn to do this, even those that are much more well off financially than you, because of the economic situation that the whole world is in right now. And with a collapse, you may see a collapse in distribution of food. And so, if your local community is not already invested in growing, you know, talk to your neighbors if you do or if you can, and encourage them to do the same thing. And you'll find that by localizing all of these things, you'll survive and weather the storm and be much better off. But this is not a time to wait around for somebody else to do it, because those grocery stores may be bare. And so all the conveniences we're used to, at whatever price you can get it at, may not be there. So this is the time to plan. So I'm glad you have the inclination to go that way.
Right. And, you know, well, I moved out of New Orleans a year and a half ago, which I regarded as a good health move in my part. I now live in coastal Mississippi. I know a lot of people who are, you might say, preparedness or advocates, primarily because of hurricanes. A lot of people think, oh, if a hurricane comes, you know, somebody's going to come save the day. Well, anyone who went through Katrina will well know that don't wait for that white soldier to arrive on that white horse, because you're going to get very hot, very thirsty, and very hungry before it happens. You need to take care of your own, and you need to take care of yourself. And be prepared, whether it's to evacuate or to hunker down at home, you're going to be on your own for at least 3 to 7 days. So you better be prepared. And that includes things like being prepared and raising gardens and canning food and drying food and so forth and so on. So, you know, I know a lot of people that are seriously putting effort into being much more self-sufficient.
But I want you to think about this, Gia. In the case that something like that were to happen, you're right now dependent upon drugs, including the blood pressure medication. What if you didn't have access to that? And so the motivation should be that is your top priority, not a side priority, a maybe priority, but look at it this way, that you've got to be prepared to handle this more holistically and naturally should the drugs not be accessible to you as well. And that's something I urge people. I've written many articles for survivalist magazines on looking and learning from the plant medicinals and the supplements that are available to bring the nutrients back in and remove the metals that are the true cause, like come back to mercury and cadmium, of something like a blood pressure issue. So whatever is going to motivate you to do those things will prepare you so that in the worst case it happens, it's not only just an inconvenience, but it's not then a life-threatening scenario.
Right. You know, I happen to have a long-time interest in herbal medicines, traditional herbal medicines, although the plants I'm familiar with are actually from the desert southwest. So once I moved to the southeastern portion of the United States, it was as though I'd been transported to an alien planet. Literally every plant from grass to trees is different. I've been educating myself for 9 years or something like that. I've got the plants here. Do I regard myself as well educated? No. But a lot of people don't realize, in terms of medicine, herbal medicine is just as powerful as the pills you buy at the pharmacy. And you don't play without knowing what you're doing, because you can do harm as well as help yourself. You do have to put some effort into educating yourself with anything that's truly medicine. I mean, things like chamomile and mint, they're relatively safe. You're not going to kill yourself with mint tea. But, you know, some of the other medicines made from herbs are really just as potent as a pill from the pharmacy. And you can do harm to yourself or others. So, you know, while I'm very, very interested in it, do I claim to be an expert? No. Am I going to be mixing medicine for anybody? No. But the general knowledge of what they can be used for, in the event of, you know, absolutely no alternative, does at least give you some tools to work with.
Yes, and homeopathic medicine is something you can work with safely with no contraindication and no toxicity. A lot of the homeopathic ingredients are plant medicinals converted into dilute form, but they're also from other substances. So those are other things that people can invest in to have, and they don't go bad or expire, really. So another thought form there. Now, naturalnews.com is a great source for additional information, a lot of it downloadable for free. So people that want to learn and don't have an ability to buy the books or download some things, there's a lot of information flowing out there just in the nick of time. We've got a little bit of time. I don't know how much, but we are literally asked to no longer abandon our birthright in healing and no longer put it off to those people who have just basically gone into so much debt that they can do nothing else but serve their slave masters, and that is by prescribing medicines, even if you don't have a drug deficiency disease, of which no human being does. But that is how the West has adopted and basically degraded its healthcare system into one of disease management. And so we've got a long way to go. You're not the only one out there. I know you don't think you are, but the point is, what you're going through is very real, and many people are suffering this way, and we do our level best to get this information. I know Washali also, she is out there lecturing and teaching all of these methods to help people empower them, which is where we are right now.
Well, you know, in addition to the practical application of restoring your own physical health, a lot of us need to pay much more attention to our political right to do that. In the process of sort of abdicating our own responsibility for our physical well-being to various alphabet soup agencies and a long list of laws, we are sort of left in a position where we're being told what we can and can't consume.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't want this trend to continue, we need to be a little bit more proactive than we've been in the past, a little less apathetic about the entire situation. Recently, there was a bill that fortunately was dropped before it was passed, but it was referred to as the Safe Food Bill, implying that it was going to make America's food supply a safe thing. Now, you know, when you actually read it, it wasn't going to do any such thing. And originally the FDA was designed to protect us from bad patent medicine and horrible food production that was delivering disease along with, you know, very adulterated food. But somehow along the way, between consumer protection and what we have today, which is more corporate protection, we no longer have food safety at all, because we do have contaminated foods. We do have medicines that aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and in fact are making people sicker, and so forth and so on. So in terms of remaining educated about what's happening politically, do you two have something to offer the audience?
Well, Charlie, you want to go? Are you still there, Washali?
No, I'm still here, sweetheart. I'm still here. I was on a different track. I was, when you were talking about this, I was thinking about most people out there aren't even paying attention to what they're putting in their mouth. They're not paying attention to what they eat. They're not paying attention to the fact that food is their first wave of either poison or medicine. And if getting people to take their power back as far as just examining what they put in their mouth. You know, I heard a statistic here recently, I think it was on the Dr. Oz show, so whatever their research machine was, that the average American eats 3 to 4 times every week at a fast food restaurant. Now, 80% of our food supply out there is already hideously contaminated with GMOs. 80%. And I promise you, the biggest supply of that is going to be in fast food. You walk into any mini market, any store at an airport, any of those impulse items that you see near the cash register at the grocery store, all of those are made with GMO sugar, GMO corn, something. And the average American is living off of this. And the more the average American continues to pollute their nervous system and their body, it compromises their ability to digest their emotions, it compromises their ability to digest their thoughts and their thinking. So the more they continue this relationship with their food, their mind and their emotions are going to be clouded and they're not going to be firing on all cylinders. And it's going to be much more difficult to get them on the taking their power back in the political arena if they can't start with what goes from their hand to their mouth.
Well, I guess I find it shocking, okay? It's a known, accepted fact nationwide, even though they're going there and eating, that fast food is bad for you. Nobody's going to go to prison for selling fast food. Sell me a quart of raw milk, and guess what? You know, some alphabet soup agency is going to be waiting for you. I'm floored by the absolute idiocy between...
You know, when I was watching one of these Dr. Oz shows recently, he was doing a little expose on what's the healthiest hamburger for you to eat at a fast food restaurant. I couldn't believe it. Almost fell out of my chair. Nothing is safe to eat at a fast food chain. What do you mean, what's the best hamburger that you can buy? And then they show him in his office eating this crap and sampling it. And I'm thinking, you're modeling this for your viewing audience? I wouldn't eat that stuff with a gun to my head.
Yeah, Dr. Oz has been, unfortunately, inconsistent in terms of getting good information out. In some ways, he's sold out to get the exposure that he has in the mainstream media. I will not fault him for some of the good works that he's doing. I recognize and acknowledge that. But then again, the mass sheeple that buy anything he recommends don't realize that they're advertising that position to be recommended. So it's just a higher level. They're getting, I believe, for the most part, safer things. But then again, he came out in support of the flu shot a couple of years ago, yet his wife was smart enough to say, no, you're not vaccinating our kids with that flu shot. So
you've
got to take even what Dr. Oz says with a grain of salt.
And now that I've regurgitated my sour grapes about our relationship with food, did you want to answer her question, Robert?
Oh, about the political issue?
Yeah. Right.
Well, this is something that's it's a difficult mess, to say the least, because so many people are programmed in so many ways. And our dear friend Jonathan Emord, who has written many, he's beaten the FDA back now a world record 7 times on many of these issues, describes our current state of government not as a constitutional republic, not as a democracy, but as a bureaucratic oligarchy. In other words, we're ruled by bureaucrats, and that is, like you said, Gia, the FDA, the different alphabet soup agencies, that basically are judge, jury, and executioner. And it's so far beyond the Constitution. And
that are not elected, they have supreme power, but they have no accountability.
Correct. And that is a very dangerous place to be, and that's where we are now, where we can't run our own lives without interference from bureaucrats. Now, that's bled down, unfortunately, in many ways to the state level, because the states have not yet figured out that there's a 10th Amendment to the Constitution which says specifically that anything not specifically enumerated as a power to the federal government belongs or is reserved to the states or the people, respectively. And yet there are groups out there. I'll be speaking at the 10th Amendment Center's next event, Nullify Now, on nullification. in Philadelphia on March 31st, and I'll also be speaking about health freedom issues at a Raleigh, North Carolina rally for Ron Paul on the 24th of March, yes, and the 31st will be in Philly. So we've got a lot of events. There is an awakening going on there, but Jonathan has just written a new book, Restore the Republic, which kind of maps out a strategy, if it's possible to salvage it. I just interviewed him a couple of times in the last round at the Health Freedom Expo in California, where we got to interact together. And I think what's happening is there is a growing awareness, there's a resurgence, but there's a great pushback and resistance to the independent streak of, let's say, old America wanting to come back alive. And I mean the good part of America that really believed in liberty. And this is another part of the puzzle that we have to, you know, say, so to speak, put back together. And it does relate to the food. It does relate to the medicine. Because all of these things have weakened our mind, our body, and our spirit to such a degree that we can be enslaved in this way by these bureaucrats and willing to take it. Like you said, Gia, how are we not doing something? You know, there's apathy. A lot of that apathy is due to toxicity, heavy metals, mercury, fluoride, etc., and is a physiological drag or an anchor on every American that doesn't understand this. Therefore, we see the biggest spark of energy and movement in those that have made steps to heal their bodies, to detoxify, to eat whole foods, unprocessed, non-GMO, non-pesticide-laden food. So the body politic, the constitution, if you will, we each have a constitution that is our own body, and we've ignored it for far too long. We gave up on grandma and all of the wisdom that she had, and we just turned it over to the white lab-coated technicians of the pharmaceutical industrial complex.
Right. I mean, it started with children being essentially abandoned to the educational system to be educated and raised, and taught everything from morality to the three R's, to our medical care being an into medical professional, our every aspect of our life.
Well, we were
turned over to somebody else.
We were sold a bill of goods when we were younger, which is this myth that we're going to have better living through chemistry. And our job is to give our power away to better living through chemistry, because these doctors, these pharmaceutical companies, they know more than we do. And it's a lie. It's an absolute lie.
And on that note, we are reaching the end of our first hour. We're going to come back to more about this topic. And in the meantime, while we are gone, go ahead and check out our website at www.exogenynetwork.com. Send me an email. Let me know what you think about it. We will be back in just a few minutes with both Vishali and Robert Scott Bell and more about our topic.
this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and tonight, Wishali and I are having a great conversation with Robert Scott Bell. We were talking about some of the political aspects of the whole alternative medicine and health issues in regards to our food and food supply just before we went on break, and so we're going to kind of continue on from there. You know, part of the entire problem with people awakening to the political aspect of regaining their power to restore their own health is finding the information out. Not only do you have to deal with politicians, probably the public's least favorite character in the world, but first you've got to know what they're doing and what's on the agenda and what you need to write your representatives about. Before you even work at changing their mind or getting them to support your point of view, you do have to inform yourself about what's on the agenda. So, Robert, you got any ideas on where people can go to start educating themselves?
Well, there's so many things, and I always like to take it down to the simplest, if you will, because the complex is sort of like the enemy of empowerment, because this is how they, as I mentioned last hour, hoodwinked us into believing we're not capable of taking care of ourselves or healing from most things. So if we come back to the simplest place and apply those principles everywhere, and see, that was my journey. It still is my journey, from the complex to the simple, and then I had to dive back into the complex to understand what happened to me, but then I had to apply simple things to get out of that mess I was in and then communicate those paths that I had uncovered. Not as if I was the only one to ever see them, but I had a way to communicate them certainly to my culture, if I can call the American. And so what you mentioned, we were talking a little bit off the break, I heard, you know, cutting off the TV, for instance. That's a huge, huge step. Huge step, because the clutter coming in just from commercial media is such that it clouds the mind, it distracts the mind, it chatters the mind, it keeps it in a place where it's very difficult to find the little simple things that we can apply, the principles, right? If we talk about how can we get out of this mess? Well, look at my body when I was 24 years of age. I had pretty much all the chronic diseases of old age, from gastrointestinal inflammation to every allergy known to man, respiratory conditions, we can go on in skin conditions, difficulty digesting just about anything and everything, fatigue, you know, lack of energy, infections that would recur. You name all those things. Like, where do I begin? And it was just one thing I could do, and that was to begin to detoxify my body. And for me, it was a simple step of, you know, finding a homeopathic remedy that would start the process and then clean up what came into my body one step at a time. Some people are ready to throw everything out of their cabinet when they realize this. Others need to take incremental steps or toe dip, so to speak. Whatever way is yours, it's your way. And, you know, you don't want to overly traumatize somebody as well. Because here's another thing, as you were talking about your health situations, if we were to remove everything all at once, you were concerned about certain herbs, for instance. I mean, it would be shocking to your system. And that's why, in many ways, I always encourage people to go gradually, unless they're under the total care of someone who really knows what they're doing, because to manage your everyday life at the same time is much more difficult, because we should all be, I should say it's funny, institutionalized right now. Partly because we've gone insane as a culture, but partly because we're so toxic. That precipitated the insanity, and to remove those toxins can be pretty difficult. So, you know, in an ideal world, we would say everybody would get to just stop working, go into some kind of sanatorium, whatever they call it in Europe in the old days, and clean up our act. But because most don't have the opportunity economically and otherwise, we have to do those little steps along the way. But every step you take, suddenly your eyes open, thing you didn't see before. And it was always right there. You know, in terms of the politics, it's like the awakening to what is some people affectionately call, some people not so affectionately call, the Ron Paul Revolution. He's simply a man who has lived in integrity for, you know, as long as he's been in politics, which is the incorruptible man is supposed to be impossible, but he's so far lived that way, and it's awakened a whole new generation to political realities, not expedience, not backroom dealing, but integrity and principle to say, hey, if he can do it, maybe I can do it. And it was similar for me as well, that it wasn't a book that got me well. I had to find somebody who was alive who actually had been worse off than me and got better than me to say it was possible. I mean, I could read about it's possible to heal from cancer, but would I really believe it, for instance? And then if you see people that have overcome cancer without chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery, suddenly you think, well, maybe it is possible. Maybe I can do it or better. And maybe I'm not as bad off as they are. So I encourage people to not only do these little steps, but to seek out people who have been down where you are or worse and have found their way out. And it doesn't mean you're going to walk their exact path, but it certainly is something that will give you some level of guidance. Some people say, I need hope, not false hope. False hope would be what Obama gave us, but the hope that is genuine based on somebody who's walked the path and is teaching you how to do it. And truly, if we had doctors in America, you know, physicians, the true ones are the ones that teach you how to heal yourself. They're not the ones that say, here, take this script and take your pill. They're the ones that say, this is the reason why you have high blood pressure. This is the reason why you have trigeminal nerve pain. Let's begin to undo the true cause instead of masking only the symptom. And as I said, I'm compassionate and I recognize the reason why we would want to mask a symptom that is very severe and painful. But we don't have a healing system. The medical system is a system of disease management, much as the political system is a system basically to screw up our minds and to keep us in a state of fear, panic, dread, and control. And so those who have a message of empowerment are often marginalized, ridiculed, fringed, as they've tried to do to Dr. Ron Paul. Less success this time through, but all they have to fall back on is fraud and force to deceive the people that he really can't win. The fact is he can and will, but it's another reality perhaps that has to be identified to acknowledge that, yes, in the end, or even in the current, we're actually winning. And that those that are so desperate to hold on to power for power's sake have already lost. They just don't know it. But you can't continue to build, a house on, for instance, sand, as they say, an improper foundation. It'll stay for a while, but if the breeze comes, the wind blows, or something happens, or the sand shifts, that house is coming down. And we're in the midst of learning that lesson that is age old. It's not like it's new, but we have this sort of collective amnesia or individual amnesia, each one of us, to forget history. For instance, when I talk about economic healing on my program, I said, talk to someone who lived through the Great Depression, and they'll teach you how to live with less and be fine with it. I mean, there were people that survived and thrived and, you know, had great bonds of love and friendship and family within the most difficult circumstances in the world, and oh my gosh, we don't have 3 cars and 10 Wii's and PlayStations. What are we going to do? We're going back to that, not because it's better or worse, just because that's where we need to learn now. We need to recognize what is valuable, not what is artificially made valuable. And so it's a necessary, scenario we're finding ourselves in. And in fact, we're co-creators of it. So we can blame the bad guys, but we can recognize at one point, like you said, Gia, it's like we are sort of participating by not doing anything about it. So we can go along for the ride and suffer, or we can take proactive steps and thrive and survive and teach others and have a handout for those who are ready to take that hand. Right now, many people are not willing to take the hand that you offer them of help, and I recognize that as a healer. I can't force somebody to get well if they're not ready or if they haven't suffered enough to make the decisions necessary to get them well. So a lot of things are happening right now, and that's why I say what I do on my show is a little different than say, oh, you've got a headache, instead of taking aspirin, here's a coffee enema, which I'll say, but it's more than that. It's to provide the tools, the principles to understand why is the headache happening. And that changes everything, because now you can't be deceived in the same way you could a moment before.
And you've got some really great powerhouses that come on your show, Robert, that are not only educational, but they've got a lot of real good personal experience that they draw upon, and they share in a lucid and a clear and articulate way that any mainstream audience could glean a great deal from. It's not some kind of convoluted doublespeak that's scientific that your eyes kind of glaze over and you go, well, I listened to the guy for 20 minutes, but I couldn't tell you what he said. You've got people that know how to disseminate information in a very succinct and direct and clear way.
Yeah, you're funny, Wyshally, because you're right. If that happened on my show, I would be bored out of my mind and I would turn my show off. So, you know, and I think that's...
Yeah, I have to agree. When your own show wants to put you to sleep,
yes.
You're in bad shape.
Yeah, so you know, I tend to pick the guests, like Wyshally says, that have an ability to communicate. And if I can't draw them out, then they're not coming back. But in many cases, yes, there are a lot of good people, some of them many unsung heroes. You know, yes, sometimes we bring on big-name celebrities or other things, but the reality is there are a lot of unsung heroes and healers out there that have a great message and can communicate it, but have not gotten access to a wider audience. And I'm all about getting them on because I want them heard in larger and larger audiences, even larger than mine. I don't care. The message is all important to me and that it gets out and that it's received. So finding ways to communicate this in a way that it is actually understood and received, that's always been the challenge. And I'm not saying the best at it, but I always strive to be better. So if, you know, a little old lady throws a tomato at me and says, hey, Robert, better, I'll listen. I'll go, oh, okay, I didn't thought about that. You know, that's how I got to today, by being pelted with tomatoes, non-GMO, but learning how to communicate better so that what you speak is actually, you know, heard, and then maybe people are inspired to do something differently.
You know, you and I are both very inspired to hold a platform for people to have a voice that mainstream media will never recognize and will never allow to have any kind of space to advocate for a bigger picture reality. I had Jonathan on my show. It was the last Friday of February. And I just basically asked him, I think, two, maybe three questions, and just threw him the reins and said, just explain, just talk, just introduce us to your newest book, but explain to people who are listening why the government isn't working. Explain to them why it's so overgrown that it can't support itself and the whole house of cards is going to collapse. And he, in that hour show, he does such a great job of start to finish in just a 1 hour lecture, basically, explaining how the government got where it is, why it's being held together the way it is, and what we need to do to extricate ourselves. And if people are listening right now and saying, well, you know, what can I do? At the very least, what you can do is don't re-elect these career politicians. If they're in there, they're career politicians, don't re-elect, don't vote for them. Get them out. That's the first thing that you can do.
Actually, first thing is show up and vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, obviously you got to show up to vote, but clearly, yes.
You've got to show up and vote, you know.
Just say, you know,
pay attention.
If you're a career politician, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and when you write to your politicians that do represent you, whether you voted for them or not, we're stuck from for whatever period of time they were elected, pay attention to their responses. Pay attention to whether or not they answered in the manner that they answer you back. In my case, I happen to be represented in the House of Representatives, but a gentleman who I really am not that impressed with. First of all, I had written to him in opposition to the pipeline. I forget the name of the whole thing, but that oil pipeline coming from Canada. The letter I got back indicated that he supported it, and he obviously didn't read what I had to say because it was written to me as though I too supported it. You know, and I don't. I think it's a terrible idea. I don't see any long-term benefit for anybody in this project. And, you know, just an example for me, in addition to, you know, other things I've written about, we tend to be opposite ends of the pole no meeting grounds. I mean, he doesn't care what I have to say. I'm not going to vote for the guy. Period. I don't care what political party he's a member of. I'm not going to vote for him. I want somebody else who reflects more with things, or at least is willing to listen to me. This guy isn't, you know, and I kind of question even why he bothers answering, because the answers really kind of indicate that he doesn't pay attention to what he's answering to.
He sends back
just on that issue.
Gee, I think we must acknowledge something that's very uncomfortable for us that would say, you know, voting would be enough. And I respect Jonathan, as you know. He's a dear friend of mine as well. And yet, if we look at the efficacy of voting, it really hasn't been an efficacious medicine. Now, I am not advocating not voting or voting. This is not my point in saying so, but it's my nature to look at all of these things and other options. And one of that I mentioned, I believe, earlier is this, with this bureaucratic oligarchy, the fact that the power has become so centralized made it so that those going up being voted in could easily be corrupted, because now there is access to power that wouldn't normally be there in a constitutionally limited form of government as it was written strictly by that, you know, the founders in that document. And because we've abandoned that and we've allowed those politicians that we voted for to abandon it, now they look at us and, you know, people like Ron Paul to say, what are you bringing up the Constitution for? Come on. I mean, this is ridiculous. We can do it because we've been doing it. There's no basis for that other than say, well, we've been doing it, that's why we can do it. So unless we also recognize that those that are going to be sent there also acknowledge it, and of course that is also Jonathan Emord's message, that we need to roll back, if we will, the federal power and bring it back to the state and local level, then we're going to see that the same people come up there. Because how many Ron Pauls out there, how many incorruptible politicians can you count in, you know, the last 50 years, the last 100 years? They're very rare indeed.
And exactly.
So the best thing is to not allow for any power play to make it available to them. So it's just another aspect to this to expand it, because I understand why people are not voting. And I don't think it's apathy. I mean, I think if they're rational about it, they're looking at it and go, what the hell are we voting for? Why? You know, we just go up
well,
there.
Well, I know that when I'm talking with my daughter about politics and voting, she's like, voting is a waste of time. And, you know, I really don't have a good argument for it, because it does, in many ways, look like a waste of time. However, it is a very simple step you can take. It doesn't require a lot of time. By not voting for the incumbent, you're saying you're not happy with what's going on. If we do that often enough, maybe eventually we will have more incorruptible politicians, because in the current political climate, a true person is not going to be inclined to enter the field of politics.
This is why it's important to give support to Ron Paul and Rand Paul. Anytime you've got a politician that is talking about dismantling the Federal Reserve, those are the people that you want to give your attention to, and those are the people that you want to support.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of people don't realize that with the current political climate that we are looking at and the trends that we see coming, shows like this one, like yours, Vishali, like yours, got a knot in my tongue here, but like yours too, Robert, we're looking at shows like ours being regarded as subversive and needing to be shut down. And, you know, we're not subversive. We're quite open about what we're doing. We're not advocating anything illegal. We're not advocating anything immoral. We are simply advocating that people use the Constitution, the things that were put in place legally, as a tool to change the way things are currently being done.
Yes. Well, this is also a reflection, if you will. You mentioned the term morality, even, you know, we've been to that. And we see that government is reflective of where we are, in the concept of getting something for nothing has been bred into us now for a few generations here in America, where we understood the independent spirit of liberty, the freedom to work, and, you know, do what we could to create a better life for ourselves and then to help others if we so choose to do so, as opposed to be forced at the point of a gun to do so. And the charity the government gives is no charity, because it's based on theft. So there are a lot of things that we have to change. As Ron Paul's often says, we have to change our view of government because we've kind of lost sight of what it was there for, merely to protect liberty, not to run roughshod over it. And that is another aspect. And so the changing is only made possible often by the suffering. As I said, would I have gone into what I do in media and in healing if I was not sick for much of my young life? Probably not. I always do. As a child that I would grow up to be a doctor, though, but it would be certainly dashed at a point when I realized that the doctoring that I knew was so destructive that I couldn't stomach going into that as work. It would be disheartening and destructive to me. And so I had to step back and abandon my dreams, relinquish it, if you will, or let it go completely in order to discover what it really was. And, of course, that was holistic medicine, natural healing, something I had never heard first 24 years of my life, basically. So in many ways, we have to let go of our preconceived notions or notions that we've learned and let go of them completely to allow for the genuine, let's say, dream, vision, mission, whatever it is you're here to do, to come to fruition. Because so many people are depressed. They're on psychiatric meds because they're living what they perceive. I'm not saying it. They perceive to be meaningless in many ways in their lives, and they're looking for meaning. Now, if you can find it in the church or your synagogue, great, but many people are not finding it there. They're dissatisfied in so many ways, so they turn to other things. And government has become the new religion, as has modern medicine become the new religion. And so in many ways, we always find something to placate, something that's missing from our lives that none of those external things can actually give us. And why, Shali, you know all well about, you know, the energetics here of that, you know, so-called disconnect, and then you look for substitutes, you may end up choosing things that are very destructive in a sincere effort to find something. But, you know, if you go back to, you know, the story of Siddhartha or any of the Buddha, all of these things, they've been through these journeys to get there. So this is part of the process. We're going through it now, and it's, you know, as the Chinese proverb says, may you live in interesting times, that saying, we are most definitely in interesting times, but they're the most potential for growth. Spiritual enlightenment occurs not when everything is easy, but when many things are difficult.
There's a great spiritual law: as it is above, so it is below; as it is within, so it is without. When we're looking at the physical world doesn't exist by itself. It exists as a reflection of something going on. From a spiritual point of view, our inner world is the only world that exists. We have dual residency. We're spiritual creatures having a human experience. We exist in a spiritual plane, and we're entered into this physical classroom. And there's something about our interior, our ruling love, what we give our attention to, what we value with our service and our love that creates our reality. And when we find ourselves in the planet Earth and we're looking at an epidemic of people giving their power away, from my point of view, the ground zero of that is that we don't know who and what we are spiritually. When we don't know our spiritual identity, when we give it away to our bank account, to our hair, to the type of clothes that we drive, to defining ourselves by our experiences. Well, I had a bad childhood. Well, I was in this terrible divorce. That is the beginning of giving your power away. And it doesn't end with just getting on a right diet. I totally resonate with what you were saying, Robert, because if I hadn't been diagnosed terminal in my 20s, I would still be in the same diet and lifestyle that I was raised in as a good American.
Yeah.
I'd still be eating Twinkies, and I'd still be doing horrible food combining, and I'd still be going to my doctor and taking antibiotics. But when I started on this path, it all kept coming back to, how do I see myself, how do I relate to myself, and how do I experience my value and power in this life? And everything else radiates from that. As it is above, so it is below. As it is within, so it is without. And this is the planet Earth where what is inside, what is invisible, what is the interior that doesn't have substance is made in a three-dimensional realm so you can see it and touch it and smell it and taste it and walk around it so that there is complete clarity about what it is that you love and what is going on in your interior, because it's made manifest around you. And if you don't like it, you have free will and power to change that. But if you don't own that you have the power, you don't claim it, and you don't know what it is, you'll constantly be reaching for something else. And I know in my journey, the way that that started cleaning up that mess was when I learned the internal organ massage. And it's something everybody can do. This is why I make such a big deal about teaching it everywhere that I go, because it's designed to be self-administered. So you get to be your own therapist. You don't have to make any appointments. You don't have to go anywhere. All you have to do is lay on the floor and put your hands in your abdomen and start working and palpitating. And it not only gets out physical toxins, it not only is a way that you can learn how to breathe properly and start oxygenating your body so it immediately starts dumping toxins, it cleans your body out of stagnant emotions. And according to the Eastern healing systems, 97% of all your illness has an emotional origin. And if your emotions are stuck in your body because they're digested in your organs in the same way that your physical food is, but if they're not getting digested because you don't know who or what you are and why you're here, you start putrefying on an emotional level that no physical doctor is going to see because they don't know how to recognize it, because they don't deal with you on an energy level. They deal with you on a crisis management level.
Well,
making any sense.
Well said, Shally. Well said.
You know, when I'm listening to you talking about this, I think about my own life. You know, essentially, I was raised where the Church of Science, you might say, was the proper and modern way to regard the world, which means that, you know, everything had to be measurable in order to be acknowledged as existing. Now, since then, I've come, in a sense, I have looked at our entire civilization, our entire species. We have spent, we're children, but we've spent so much time devoting our attention to advancing in terms of science and technology, our physical aspects, that we have neglected our own spiritual and energy aspects entirely. And it's only now that I'm beginning to hear more and more people talking about giving more attention to those facets of our whole being. And as we do so, you know, maybe we will become a much better race, a more peaceful race, a more cooperative one, one that's capable of being the epitome of all these attributes that our main religions advocate as being the pinnacle of spiritual development, instead of a continual excuse for wars over who's got the best God.
If you don't know that you're beyond your medical diagnosis, if you don't know that you're beyond the experience of fear that tyrannizes you, if you don't know that, you'll never realize that you are.
All right. And, you know, we need to regard ourselves as a whole being. You know, we're beginning to see the advances in those areas with medical science. They are beginning to integrate traditional medicine treatments into their entire pharmaceutical sort of symptom crisis treatment, with success, I might add. But it isn't reached everywhere, and for many people it's been so long since there was anything resembling traditional medicine that they have no memory of it at all. And therefore,
right.
They don't give much importance to it. You know, in my own case, you know, in making these lifestyle changes, earlier Robert was talking about how, you know, some people stick in their toe. Well, you know, I really didn't have a concise game plan. But you might say my rule of thumb is I come from a long line of, you might say, pioneer stock, in essence. There wasn't a lot of faith put in doctors because they usually weren't within very reasonable travel. I mean, sometimes they're over a day's travel away. That isn't going to then become a huge part of your life. You're going to take care of your issues yourself. That's also true in terms of your diet. You know, and so my rule of thumb was, is this something that my grandmother would have cooked? Because, you know, prior to probably the 1950s, America's food was much simpler, probably much healthier, even though it included all these things that they now say are bad for us, like real cheese and raw milk and home-churned butter and lard and so forth and so on. So, you know, essentially you just wanted to go back. I figured that if, you know, I had relatives that were living to be 75 to 100 years old in 1700, why are we now dying in our 60s? If our ancestors lived so much longer, in a time period when the average life expectancy was only to be 45 years old.
Well, it's a good point to bring up, Gia, because that's often a question when you actually point out the shortfalls of modern medicine. They always say, well, look how much longer we're living. Well, the advancements were made in hygiene, nutrition, sanitation that reduced the rate of infant mortality, which, of course, when you have a high infant mortality rate, even if you're living to 70, 80, or 90, it's going to skew the statistics down to a very low number. And the fact of the matter is, if you survived, you know, childhood, and you lived, you could live to a very old age, and much more readily, and that's not considered often when they put these stats and say, hey, look, we're living longer. But the reality is, too, when you look at how people are aging, and, you know, fortunate in a sense, because I had all my old age diseases, and I got them first, and I got them done with, which is an interesting way to go about it. But we look at the quality of life of those that are aged now, and it's quite different, because, you know, in a previous era and time, and in some places around the world, although not as frequent as it once was, the elders were working the lands almost up until the day they died, and they were, you know, regularly over 100, who knows how old they were, and they didn't become chronically ill with neurodegenerative diseases. They were pretty much present and able and capable of doing so much. And so their death was what we call a natural death, which is something we don't know of in the West, where they didn't die of a disease. They knew their time was near, and they had lived a long life, and they said their goodbyes, went off into their hut, and gently and beautifully transitioned to another life. And so that's another aspect of, as Vaishali said, we don't know who we are anymore. As spiritual beings, we've bought and sold this idea that all we are is this lump of flesh and epithelial tissue, and somehow that ends and you have something that goes on, like you possess yourself. What is that? You have a soul, or are you soul? I mean, you think about that, and just we often say, well, I have it, my soul. It's like, well, what do you mean yours? I mean, isn't that, it's either you or it's not you. Do you think you have a body, or do you have a soul? Are you a body, are you soul? And then I think that's an important distinction to make, and I think the distinctions are there in even the traditional old religions, but oftentimes the way they communicate these things, as I said, the message, the language has changed so much that the original meaning is often lost for people that are there.
Right. You know, and so, you know, I have simply chosen that because of the fact that processed food is obviously not a good choice for me. Going back to a way of food perversion, desire, you know, all of it, I'm not perfect. It's not always exactly what it should be. I don't make my own bread anymore. I have something that I eat on. And that's probably a bad choice because the areas that are found in partial food bread. And so forth and so on. So, you know, not all the changes are 100% where I think they should be. Some are changes that are on the list of things to do that I'm just not up to making at this point. But incorporating more whole grains was something that I was more used. Things like white rice and white bread. We do more whole grains. We do more vegetables. When we eat meat, I want products that are recognizable in their original form. In my opinion, that's a less, that means less opportunity for everything from bacteria to other ingredients to be added, and so forth and so on. So, you know, you make these choices gradually and make these changes gradually, and I'm not done with making the changes. But I feel that I'm on the right road, even though I'm not there 100% yet.
I don't know that there is 100%. I don't know there is 100% as long as you're here, you're growing.
Yeah.
Kind of your job resume. And Ayurveda totally underscores what Robert Skett said, which is if you want to make changes in your life, Ayurveda says, make the simplest and easiest one first.
Okay, could you repeat that last bit, Vishali?
Yes, that if you want to make changes in your life, you start with the simplest and the easiest ones, and then you build from there. Because even radical change can be imbalancing.
Right. And, you know, that was, like I said, you know, when I initially started taking the probiotics, I was taking them in a manner, I guess it was being typically used for someone who was in much better gastrointestinal health than I was. And it put my system in complete shock, and I was not a happy camper. And by changing that to, it happened to be from your recommendations, to a method that was better for someone who was in the state I was in, I had a much smoother transition than I've been going through over the last month. And I'm a much happier camper, okay? You know, I'm no longer as miserable. And so I'm seeing improvement with the things that I have added to my regimen. The increase in water was very important. It's a very low-cost addition to your diet, even if you're buying your purified water like I am. The probiotics there, again, that's not an incredibly expensive addition to trying to become more. Using an organic supplement for vitamins and to sort of boost my immune system. Again, that's not an incredibly expensive one. So, and normally switching from white rice to incorporating more vegetables and so forth and so on. These are incredibly expensive choices that I've made. So for those people who are worried about, you know, increased expenses, yeah, you do notice it at the grocery store, but you look at this way if you want less to carry in, okay? You are trimming the fat out of your budget by eliminating those products that are probably in your fat. Forget about it. They're making you unhealthy, they're making you feel bad, and they're making you gain weight, and you're no longer consuming them. So you no longer have to buy them. And there are changes that people can make to start regaining their own control of their health while they're educating themselves on additional changes that they can make.
One of the reasons why going to robertscottbell.com, that's essential, is he's got so many shows that you can download that you can start really piecemealing information here and there and making these changes. And the wisdom and the acumen that and expertise that Robert brings to understanding homeopathy and our diet and what's going on with some of the things as far as our diet and lifestyle and government, my big forte is helping people understand that they've got to digest and release the fear in their life.
Yes.
When Robert went in the direction he did when he had his health crisis, the direction that I went was understanding that the underpinning to the 90% of my health problems was I didn't know how to release and digest fear. I didn't know how to get it out of my body, out of my mind, out of my nervous system, and I was accumulating it at an incredible rate that was literally killing my body. People out there don't understand that they're living on a foundation of fear. And there are ways to learn how to digest it for the food that it is, take from it what you need, and let go of the rest for the waste that it is. Because when you know how to digest fear, The government can't manipulate you. The medical world can't manipulate you, because the key that they come in and turn their manipulative lock is fear, is getting you to be afraid. And when you know how to digest it and no longer be victimized by it or allow it to run your life, you can start making some other clear-headed decisions.
Exactly.
Yes, and in my case, not only was the fear one of the things that I really need to work on letting go, but it was anger. You know, I was a very angry teenager and young adult. I thought that I had dealt with those issues, but you know, now over the past few years, I'm like, no, I didn't really deal with it. I simply bundled it up nicely and put a ribbon on it and set it on the shelf.
Welcome, I really didn't let go of it. What most of our culture does, I find you guilty of being human. And to tell you the truth, Gia, I find anger is a secondary form of fear.
Sure. And
the anger for me as a young adult was probably the most defining thing about my character, was that I was a very angry young lady. And angry about a number of things, you know, ranging from social injustice to, my interaction with my own family. And was it justifiable? It doesn't really matter. You know, I had decided to take on this load of anger. Did it do me any good? Well, anger can be, just like fear, it can be useful to beyond a certain point. It's like lit, you know, it just gets kind of heavy.
Because we're not taught how to manage and digest our emotions. We're not taught how to be senior to them and treat them for the form of food that they are. They bring us something. Robert, were you going to say something about fear?
Well, specific to anger, I always like to tie it into the human physiology, because sometimes the emotions are so overwhelming. But sometimes if you clean certain things up, that the anger can dissipate. Sometimes it can rise up, then dissipate. But for instance, I see a lot of liver congestion associated with anger issues. So liver, we see these suppressed emotions, including anger, come out. Don't be surprised, and that is something that, as you know, Aishali, that we've got to digest and release and allow that to leave. And then, of course, we see the regeneration of healthy new cells, so to speak, and on a physical as well as a spiritual level. So these are very important aspects of the as above, so below principle that you also mentioned. I would say in repairing integrity, you know, to cells, to epithelium, to the protective layer that we have as we're inhabiting this body, is very critical, so that we can move through the world. The injury to the gastrointestinal system is much like the emotional wounds, perhaps, that we carry with us that we don't allow to heal because we don't know how, and it's overwhelming. And so I say, as above, so below. Well, if it's too hard to deal with the emotional aspect of it, let's look to the physiology and see if we can repair that. Impacts how you can deal with the emotions that still are there, but maybe too overwhelming. So if I may, I wouldn't mind just sharing a tip as far as healing the gastrointestinal tract. And, you know, people can take for it what they want, but it's just another option to know that they'll... Very few people rarely hear about it unless they listen to my show. They, you know, these kinds of things come out regularly. But I don't know, you know, I want to do what you guys want to do, so that's just an option.
No, go ahead, Robert.
So I want you to think about this, because we've all had injuries when we were kids or adults to our skin, whether it would be a cut or a scrape or a burn, any kind of wound. And if it's not too bad, we don't really have to do anything. And imagine that. Nature takes care of it. You don't have to think, heal, heal, heal. Oh, heal that skin. And it just happens. There's an autonomic aspect of it. There's an intelligence. There's an order. The cells know what to do. But if those cells don't have what they need, or if there are many obstacles to that healing, it may linger, or it may even heal improperly, and what you have is scar tissue, or post-surgery you would have an adhesion. So we can utilize the substances of the natural world to get past those obstacles to healing. So if I speak just purely physiologically, I will say, okay, what can help us heal? And, you know, I often lecture on the use of silver in the family of colloidal silver, or a bioactive silver hydrosol that I prefer, and because it stimulates regrowth of tissue that's been damaged. That's why burn care centers use it. But there's also a wonderful botanical that grows in southern climes and even some in the desert called O'Vera. and we utilize the aloe vera juice in mixing with the silver hydrosol or colloidal silver and drive it down together into the gut to cleanse any abnormalities, infections, etc. But we want to down-regulate the inflammation that we are stuck in with leaky gut, etc. And then we want to stimulate the healing, the stem cells that are normally going to have a regeneration, let's say, capacities, and accelerate those things. And silver can do that as well, along with the aloe. And then, as you know, Gia, so well, the probiotics, which are, depending on what you're utilizing, could be relatively inexpensive, can then replenish the forest that has regrown. Because remember, if we wipe out the little villi, we are not absorbing nutrients anymore. And even if we put a load of good probiotics in there, they don't have a home to live in. We know they don't live in the desert. They live in a forest, so to speak. So we want the integrity of the lining, just like the skin. There's an epithelial lining to the gut. And so there are other like amino acids like L-glutamine that are often used. And also another thing that you can get relatively inexpensively is known as colostrum, you know, the first milk that we get as a baby, all mammals. And we can utilize colostrum as a nutrient tool as well as a medicine at any age of a mammal's life for regenerative capacity as well. So these are just some specific tips I like to do and pepper in, you know, in any show so that if you come for, well, I just need to know what to do, you'll get that as well when you hear the Robert Scott Bell Show, in addition to all the other things Waishali was talking about that we do cover and the great guests that I get to have on board. So I appreciate you letting me share that.
Okay, well, those are all great, great ideas and good places for me to start on my own research. Because, you know, restoring the health of your gastrointestinal system is, like, critical because if that's not functioning, you can eat the best food in the world and it's not going to do anything.
Of your health, it's the foundation of everything,
right?
Because we come here to digest our life. As it is above, so it is below. As it is within, so it is without. And how your physical body is digesting is a metaphor for how you are digesting the whole of your life.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting you brought up the aloe vera, too, because my grandparents swore by aloe vera. It would cure everything under the sun, in addition to the typical topical use for burns and sunburn. They used it to cure just about everything. But we are running out of time. Robert, you want to tell everybody about your website and how to listen to your show again?
Sure, yeah. 6 days a week, Sunday starting at 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday starting at noon Eastern. And if you miss a show, don't worry. It's downloadable for free. So you can go to robertscottbell.com, and you can link to everything else out there through Genesis Communications Network and Natural News Course Update, pretty much 6 days a week with all the show notes and links out to all the wonderful things we cover. Again, healing on all levels, not just physiological, emotional, mental, but spiritual as well, economic, and even political. So we try to make it interesting and fun at the same time, having all the things that make talk radio engaging and challenging. And, again, I greatly appreciate, Gia, you having me on the show, and it's a special bonus that we got to share the time with Waishali as well.
And
I just want to throw in, I love to download Robert Scott's Bell Burn Show, burn it to a CD, and then when I drive around and do my stuff, I get to listen, I get to take Robert with me. I want to encourage people to do that. It's not something you have to be chained to your computer to listen to. Burn it and take it with you. Put it on your iPod, put it on your cell phone. My website is Purple V. V is in violet, the most beautiful purple website in all of internet land. And you can sign up for my newsletter on purplev.com. It'll send you a link to the different articles I write. It'll tell you about my radio show, who my guest is, when I'm solo, and where I'm going around teaching the internal organ massage or other Ayurvedic, Tibetan and Indian Ayurvedic techniques for taking your power back and managing your health.
Great. Well, folks, it has been a really, really fun program, but unfortunately, as usual, it's been all too quick, and we are out of time. So I hope that tonight's program has given you all plenty of food for thought, as well as more illumination for your personal journey towards truth. Join us again next week as we return for another fascinating conversation that's sure to have plenty of food for thought once again. You've been listening to the Dawn of Shades program, and I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good night.